Thank you. Yeah, what I would like to present in the talk is a little bit, give some more detailed information about experiments which we have done at Flash, so really focus on one particular topic. And this is photonization experiment in the gas phase. So just simple experiments where we photonize rare gases with flash or with an additional optical laser. That's an experiment which has been done in collaboration with a number of groups. It's our group in France, from Lixham. The people at DAISY, mainly the other people who really worked on the experiment were Stefan Duster and Paul Radcliffe. The group of Eugene Kennedy, and John Costello and the Dublin City University, the group of Cyril Lewis in Belfast, and now we have some experimental data, so we need also some theoretical support, and this was given by the group of Alfred Marquet in Paris and the group of Alexei Gromgachmayo in Moscow. So the outline of the talk I have separated into two parts. One is just one color experiment, that means we just use the FEL just for simple photonization. It was mainly used for FEL characterization, because it's just a tool where you have, you see what's going on. And then, of course, there is this possibility we have heard have nonlinear effects, multi-photon processes, but we'll discuss this also a little bit. But the main part is due to some two-photon, two-color experiments, where we combine the FEL with an optical laser. And there we had already heard that the problem of synchronization, so you have to make sure, or you have to characterize your setup with some two-photon cross-correlation experiments, and I will show you some, also some results we have already obtained and give you a little bit of outlook what we might do or would like to do in the future. Okay, first of all, we had two beam times, one last year in August, one rather recently, some weeks ago, this year at the Flash facility in Hamburg. We used the beamline BL2, so this is this beamline here marked in blue. Our experimental setup was in this laser safety hutch, so the laser is produced in this hutch here and comes over again some like 10, 15 meters into our experimental chamber. So at the time, at 2005, we used the FEL at 32 nanometers. This year, we had then the possibility to have 25 and even go to 30.8 nanometers. The averaged energy was something like 1 to 10 microjoules at this time. So we were just always at the beginning of this operation, so we had relatively low average energy of the beam. Had 30-15 femtoseconds pulse widths, and okay, the typical operation parameters you have here. So we did photoelectron experiment. What we used was the high acceptance electron spectrometer, which really detects all electrons which are produced here in the interaction zone between a gas jet and the FEL, because a strong magnet which pushes all electrons toward a time of light detector, you really have 4 pi detection efficiency, and then you measure just the kinetic energy by measuring the time of light of the electrons at the end with this multi-channel plate. There's another thing we have here in our experimental setup, it's just a little phosphor screen, which gives you already a rough idea about the spatial overlap between the FEL and the optical laser. And we have at the end also a thermal pile or a photodiode that gives you already a rough idea about the temporal overlap between the two pulses, and also is used just for intensity normalization, just to have a normalization standard for the FEL intensity. Okay, so first I start with some simple photonization experiments, one photon, one color, only just simple photonization. What you have normally in the chamber, okay, that's not yet photonization, but what you have is, you look at your thermopulse signal, you have in this experiment, we had 8 bunches in the macro bunch structure, so you measure for each the intensity of the L pulse, so you see that you have a variation in the intensity, which you can measure, which you then can normalize your electron data on it afterwards. This is the electron spectrum, this is the time of light here, and you see again, you have electron signal for each particular bunch. So when you have a FEL bunch coming into the chamber, you measure some electron signal. So what you can do then is just to zoom into one of this spectra. That means you look at one single shot spectrum. And now you convert also now the time of light into the normal kinetic energy. So you have a normal photoelectron spectrum here taking a 38 eV from the FEL, and you ionize xenon atoms. What you see is a strong 5P line. That's precisely what you should get at this kinetic energy. There's nothing new. This is really, people from synchronous radiation do it all the time with much higher resolution. But okay, that shows you at least, and this is the most important point, that we can do single shot spectra, because an interesting thing is when you look here at the intensity, this gives you on the channel plate something like 70 millivolt. 70 millivolt on the channel plate would mean that you have something like 10 to the fifth, 10 to the sixth electrons created per shot in your interaction volume. That means you have a huge number of electrons. This allows you, of course, then to make a spectrum, electron spectrum, where one shot. On the other hand, it also confirms somehow that you have 10 to the 11 times 12 photons in the FEL bunch. And okay, that means you have single shot possibility. You might, with this high photon intensity, also have some nonlinear effects. So that's an open question now, and I will come to this later. But there's, of course, also a problem, and Jochen Schneider has said it also. You have space shards effect. When you have to deal with this high number of electrons, you have to know what you're doing. And for us, the only thing at the moment we saw was that we have a decrease in our spectral resolution in the electron analyzer. Normally, we should have something like 50 milliEV in the experiment at the FEL with this high electron intensities, we get something like 300 milliEV. So you cannot do really then as a single shot high spectral resolution, high resolution photoelectron spectroscopy. But what you can do is, of course, single shot spectroscopy. And for this, we look at these tiny little structures here, which are nevertheless whether they are, which are small. But this, when you blow them up, it shows you that they're quite, they can be identified. And these are structures coming again from the 5P or 4D ionization of xenon, now by the second or third order light of the FEL. So that you have a monitor, a one-shot monitor for the second and third harmonics of the FEL, and that's what we did. For example, we looked at this 4D signal produced by the third harmonics as a function of this main 5P line, so the relation between the third harmonics and the fundamental. And this gives you then, in a single shot, this type of correlation function. This is the intensity of the FEL, of the fundamental, and this is the intensity of the third harmonics. So you see that for high intensity, you have a quite large spread of intensity of the third harmonics. This is a statistical behavior. This has been calculated by Galloni and Saldin also, and they were quite happy to compare these two, the experiment and their calculation. It gives you an idea how this statistical model works. So this was one thing we could do to characterize the FEL. The other thing, we then, because the cross sections are known for the rare gases, for the different photon energies, we could then determine the intensity, relative intensity of the second and third harmonics. And at that time, in August 2005, at 32 nanometers, we had something like between 0.2 and 0.5% of the fundamental were going into the second and third harmonics. But now we come to the question, we have said, okay, this is second harmonics, and we heard it already in the talk of Matthias Richter, Jochen Schneider has also mentioned it. Okay, what we want to see and what should be possible in these high intensity beams should be some two-photon, some multi-photon processes. So at the moment, these two processes, either with the second harmonic or with this two-photon, brings you to the same energy. So when you just measure an electron at this particular energy, you cannot distinguish between the two processes. So you have to make sure what is in here in order to find out if you really have a nonlinear process. And this is now at the time, as I said, in August 2005, we have measured similar values for helium, argon, xenon. We have it observed in the focused and the unfocused beam. We have observed it also in the spectral distribution we measured from the FEL. So we think that we only have second harmonics, or that the values are due to the second harmonics. That is also confirmed by some calculation that showed at this intensity we had at this time, we have a 10 to minus 6 difference between the one photon process and the two photon process. So difficult to measure even with a strong or high intensity of the FEL. But now we have heard that the situation has changed a little bit in this 1 year, and really in the good sense. We don't have any longer only some microjoules. We have more than 50 microjoules. Also, you can do a little bit better than we did with the focus spot when you really take care where to put your experimental chamber. And this gives you intensities in the range of 10 to the 13th. And then you can really hope or believe that you have this nonlinear process, and one is this, what has also been presented earlier, this two-photon double ionization. And just to make this a little bit more clear, just because it's really a fundamental process and everybody in atomic physics would like to know if what's really going on, this is some calculations done by the group of Peter Lambropoulos quite recently. And there are two processes, in fact, in this two-photon double ionization. That means you have two photons and you get out two electrons. And there are two ways to do it. Either you first create a helium ion, and then with the second photon, you ionize again these helium plus ion to get helium 2 plus. Or you have the direct process where directly you put in two photons and you get out two electrons. And this really of fundamental interest to understand this process and the importance of this process. And they have done some calculation showing that there's a completely different behavior here of the direct process, which goes into saturation, and in this sequential process, which really grows and grows all the time and takes over at some particular intensity, this direct process. And now they don't know which cross-section you have to put in, and so this crossing over is at a different intensity. And this is something also fundamental to be measured and to be known, because theory can do it, but they don't have any real experimental data to fit or to compare the experiment with. Okay, but this should be coming up now. Probably there have already been some experiment now, but at our point we had too low intensity to do this experiment. So we also focus more on some two-color, two-photon experiment that also our main interest. And what we did is photonization of dressed atoms. That's again, first a characterization experiment. So you have the FEL, you know that there has a jitter, you have the optical laser, which is normally quite stable, and you have to make sure that you get the two in time, one on top of the other. So, and to measure this or to have an idea how good it is, we did some experiment which are quite well known for people working normally with the high harmonic generation sources. They just use the VUV beam in order to ionize a rare gas, for example here the argon. You kick out an electron by a VUV pulse, and in the photoelectron spectrum you see one line, it's just a photonization line of this particular subshell. And then you put this electron into a strong field of an infrared or optical laser. And when the field is strong enough, and when both pulses overlap in time, then this electron might absorb one infrared photon or even emit an infrared photon, and you see in the photoelectron spectrum some sidebands. And these sidebands, of course, then they are quite sensitive to this temporal overlap between these two pulses. So that's what we try to do. At the flash, we have this laser facility, optical laser facility, which was built by the Max Born Institute, and there's a 150 femtosecond titan sapphire laser and also a 12 picosecond pumped laser for this titan sapphire laser. So at the beginning, we tried to make these two photon processes with a 12 picosecond laser just in order to be free from any jitter induced from the FEL. So what we did is now went to helium. This is just a one photon experiment. Here you have this nice one line only for the 1s ionization of helium. This is a nicely separated line. Of course, we have some problems here with background, but when you look where the sideband should appear, so you would really then look at this region here where you have no other intensity, and when here something is coming up, when you put your optical laser in, then it should be due to a two-photon process. Two photon to color. And that's what we did. So you have here this main 1s line, which is huge, and you have here now, when you scan the delay, the optical delay between the FEL and the optical laser, then you have here around time zero a little structure coming up, which are these sidebands, which I said, which are only there when you have the FEL and the optical laser in your experimental chamber. And this, okay, we have something like 1 or 2% of the main line. This was also what you should expect from theory, what you could have with this intensity of the optical laser. So that works quite well. We have somehow a way to measure the sideband. Everything works fine. What we could do is then to have the integrated intensity in the sideband as a function of the delay. This gives it a cross-correlation curve. Okay, the width is something like 12 picosecond. This is, of course, only the optical laser, because 12 picosecond with respect to 50 femtoseconds of the FEL, you will not see it. But what we could do with this, to find our delta t equals zero, because here we know within a precision then of 1 or 2 picosecond where the two pulses are at the same time in our experimental chamber. And what we could set already at this time was the jitter of the FEL should not be larger than 1 picosecond, otherwise we would have seen a broadening of this cross-correlation curve. So this was the situation last year. We had then the chance to come back this year, and we just changed now this optical laser with per picosecond with a 150 femtosecond laser, did the same experiment, and okay, now we have here the helium main line. We have here now the sidebands on these two sides. You see we did also a little bit on this background signal, and now the relative intensity is something like 20%. And now you have really something where you can say, okay, now the sideband is really a monitor, a one single shot monitor of the temporal overlap between both of them. And of course, we did the same on xenon. Then you have the same, this three-dimensional plot, where here the sideband is coming up around t equals zero. You have even the second or third sideband, and you can do your cross-correlation curve, which now is no longer this 12 picoseconds, now 600 femtoseconds. And the 600 femtoseconds, okay, when you really do the deconvolution between 30 femtoseconds from the FEL, 150 from the FEL, okay, you cannot get the 600, but the main part is at the moment due to the jitter. So when you measure this cross-correlation curve, you can deduce that you have a jitter of something like 500 femtoseconds. So that's, let's say, when you don't do anything else, when you just forget about any additional measurement, you can use this as a time resolution for the FEL two-photon experiment. But, of course, you can do a little bit better because you can do single-shot analysis. So that we just were setting our experiment at this time delay delta t equals zero, and we're then measuring single-shot data. So most of the time, of course, or quite a long time, we don't see anything except one photon annihilation. So you will not hit the FEL, or the FEL will not hit the optical laser. You have just one photon annihilation by the FEL. But then, at some point, this sideband comes up here. This goes down a little bit in intensity, and here the first sideband comes up. When you look another time, you see that you have even the second sideband, and even at best, what we could see is up to 4 sidebands. That means 4 optical photons have been absorbed by the electron. And, of course, you have a reduction here of the main line because it's the same intensity, it's the same electron which has to be redistributed now under the main line and the sidebands. So this was, of course, then quite interesting because now you can try. For this, of course, when you're outside, you know we know that we have the jitter. When you look at single-shot analysis, you know that quite often you're outside. You will not hit with the FEL this 100 femtosecond of the optical laser. So you're just outside, and then we don't see any sidebands. So the sideband characterization then allows, nevertheless, within the optical or infrared pulse to pin down, let's say, the time. We have really perfect overlap when we have really maximum field, maximum sidebands. So this is something, the red spectrum, something close to the best overlap in time we have between the infrared and the FEL. And the other one, when you have only 2 or 1 sideband, then of course you go down a little bit out, you have a little bit smaller field here which fields the electrons. So now we are trying to get really some numbers out of it, how good we can be. That means to have really a measure here of the intensity with respect to the temporal position of the FEL with respect to the infrared. And I think we can do so because there also we have some calculation which helps try to understand the thing. This is now a calculation done for the maximum or the best overlap, really to simulate this 4-sideband structure. And in fact, that was going on. This is a main line in the middle. This goes down like it does in the experiment. And you have here on both sides 1, 2, 3, and even 4 sidebands. So it's something which can be modeled by theory. We can measure, and I think we can go a little bit further in the analysis of this shot-to-shot cross-correlation or shot-to-shot measurement where we are between optical laser and the FEL. The other thing is that it's, of course, also then getting interesting for theoreticians because this sideband here is now not only, because you have such a strong field, is not only a two-photon process, you have also to include some higher orders of the of modulation of this process, because you can also absorb two photon and subtract one, or first subtract one and then add one. You always get the same energy or the same sideband position, but only other higher order terms come into play. And that's something also that's interesting for theory. Okay, so in some way one could say that's also already an experiment or an application, but we went a little bit further just to see if we can really do some applications, let's say, with this two-photon pump probe technique. And the first thing is, again, okay, now it's coming back really to atomic physics. And when you look to this two-photon process, ionization of helium by two photons from a point of view of an atomic physicist, what you do is just you ionize in a 1s shell, you kick out a p electron because you get one angular momentum from the photon, and when you have a two photon, you change again the angular momentum of the electron, you have here an epsilon s, epsilon d continuum. Okay, that's nothing special, but you have here also then transition. When you use now a linear polarized light, you only should induce transition delta m equals zero. So when you have parallel polarization vectors from the infrared and the FAL light, you will always only excite here the mg equals zero states. So okay, nothing would change. But when you now change the relative orientation of the polarization between the FAL and the infrared laser, you mix up somehow here the intermediate state. You have also a probability to excite this plus and minus one. It's due to the fact because in the second step, you have to change your coordinate system in order to treat again, the second step in a consistent way. And at the end, what comes out, that you have here other or different proportion of the epsilon s and epsilon d continuum. And when you look then into the spectrum, you just measure now the intensity of the sideband as the function of the relative angle between the polarization vectors of the FL and the optic laser, parallel, perpendicular, going back to parallel. You have this variation here of the intensity, which seems to be stronger for xenon than for helium. Okay, one xenon is a P shell, helium is a 1s shell. Okay, that has to be now analyzed. There is some theory going on. One, okay, is quite simple. You have to model it with a cosine squared function. Okay, that works not so badly. And then you have this prefactors here. And this is now where physics will come into play, because these prefactors here, this S0, 1, and 2, these are the partial cross-section in the final continuum. These are the G values for these final ionic states. So I think we can, by now playing just around with the polarization of the FEL and the optical laser, we can also get some information about these two-photon ionization processes in a strong field. So that's something new we would like to follow up a little bit. But there's another thing which we then, and which was the initial idea when you first read the numbers and all what has been said for the FEL, that you have a tunable source that you can excite at whatever energy you want. We were just coming up with this idea just to drive a resonance with the FEL. That means now coming from the other side where we have just had this two-photon direct ionization process, now to bring either in one step or in two step for the VUV or for the infrared, just the resonance into play. That means have two-photon one resonance or two-photon double resonance excitation. And this is something which has been calculated already some years ago already by Peter Lambropoulos, and has been now applied to some experiments using pulse structures. What you have here is the helium. You can excite a particular resonance about 60 eV. And then you also drive your optical laser or your infrared laser into resonance. That means you couple with a strong lay, with a strong field, two resonances. That means also, on the other hand, you couple two different ionization continua. And at the experimental point of view, what you see is here that you have this normally these autoionization profiles, which have a quite asymmetric profile. When you have particular intensity for this optical laser, you see a small, strong change of this resonance profile depending on the intensity of this infrared laser, which is now just playing around with intensity or just playing around with the temporal delay, which also will shift you the intensity brought in by this optical laser. So this is something I think, well, I hope we can do, maybe, or let's say to start with it already at the end of the year, where we have another beam time, and we can, with the FEL, for example, drive into one particular, or can tune it into one particular resonance. Okay. And the last thing is then just the photonization or photodissociation time resolve thing of molecules is, of course, a direct way how to use this femtosecond infrared and VUV pulses. And this is something, again, you can imagine a lot of things, just time resolved molecular fragmentation. We just wanted to start again with a quite simple thing. This is a dissociation of hydrogen. Simple molecule, you can model it. And what we have there in mind is to dissociate the H2 with the FEL, produce an H+ and an excited hydrogen, and then come in with an optical laser and ionize this excited hydrogen. And then you end up with two hydrogen ions. That means you have at the beginning and the end the same thing, but you can have it by two pathways, because you don't know where you create your ion, where you create your excited atom, on the left, on the right side. So you should have an interference in this effect between an excited atom going to this way onto this way. That means when you then map the electron signal and the function of time with your optical laser, you should see some Doppler interference. And when you do the calculation with the energies you have, then you should see here a structure which has a width of something like 2 picoseconds. And 2 picoseconds, of course, okay, I choose this example because 2 picoseconds is much larger than the 500, 600 femtoseconds we have at the moment as usable resolution. So with even when we have a resolution of something, temporal resolution of 500 to 600 femtoseconds, we should be able to see some variation on the scale of 2 picoseconds. Okay. And with this, I then would like to summarize. I hope I have shown you that we could do some one-cal experiment, which are more to show you a little bit, or to give you an idea about the statistical behavior of the FEL that were used for characterization. We have, okay, discussed at least these two and multi-photon processes, and I think they are really now, experiment will come up. Richter has shown already the first hint, let's say, of this signal. And we'll discuss it, I think, in the next months quite intensively, what's really coming out on these nonlinear processes. And our main interest was these two color experiments where we have seen sidebands on the rare gases with a picosecond and femtosecond laser. It's again, characterization for the FEL stability, temporal stability. Have done the first experiment on polarization effects in this two-photon ionization continua. And there are still a lot of pump probe application, I think, to come. And hopefully we will do something of it. But some of them in the very few or next future. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Meyer, for your talk on a very important field of the two or multicolor experiments. There are surely some questions, but let's have at least one or two, or at most, I'm sorry, a little bit over. Yes. Please.
Is this, given the high dependence on the polarization of the IR probe pulses, I'm thinking about your sideband generations with photoelectrons. Is this an area that could benefit from pulses that are made that have a dynamic ellipticity? That is to say, you might have a large region of circular polarization with a very narrow region somewhere in the middle of linear polarization, and thereby give you effectively a much shorter probe pulse for the modulation experiments.
That means you want to, when you have the same pulse, what we need is, of course, in this pulse, a particular energy. And when you modulate it, it was also your question also on, I don't know what's used here, so you can also put a chirp on it.
Yes.
Now you try, let's say, to modulate a little bit the polarization content of the
modulate beam. The ellipticity, yes.
Yeah, but then you mix up again everything, no? At the moment, all these effects we want to see in, let's say, to control that the physics behind, are due to the fact that you really know precisely what you're doing. It would be good to change from linear to circular polarization. not only to use linear and play around with the relative orientation, to have left and right circularly polarized light. That would help, because this gives you another way to determine this partial cross-section, this S1, S0, S2.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not within one beam when you
All right.
Yeah. Jörg.
So naively speaking, I would expect that there should be plenty of experimental evidence on two photon ionization from the classical high power lasers, just at longer wavelengths. So my question is, why is it so interesting to expand this knowledge to short wavelengths?
Two, let's say.
What?
That's a two photon double ionization. Yeah. What people can do, or what they did already, is multi-photon double ionization, or even with synchronous radiation, you can do double ionization. That is quite well known. But there you have two photons, and you get out two electrons. Yeah. And there, the particular, let's say, region where, let's say, the correlation between the electrons and the photons come into play. So that's the region where the models don't work, and you don't have the same model playing with short wavelengths or with long wavelengths. So you use different models. And this is somehow an intermediate region, and nobody at the moment, okay. There are some ideas, of course, for theory, but it's interesting just to look at it, because it's something to explore, really, to see if these two models converge together and if there's some consistency behind. I'm not sure if that is, but okay, one has to find out.
Thanks.
So it's just two.
Let's thank our speaker again to continue.